and welcome to another episode of Two Peas in a Podcast. This is Michelle.
And Trevor.
And we are at the beginning of a very hot few days and at the end of a very exciting lockdown, or as I've heard them talking about it as the circuit breaker. So obviously they're trying. So I'm hoping many a garden was worked in over the weekend. What do you think, Trevor?
Well, I do. The weather's actually been quite cool, even though they seem to publicise the heat. We've actually had some very nice cool days, you know, and sort of, you know, how you're always having a conversation with the checkout chick who says, and what did you do today? Well, on a nice cool day, I usually emphasise it is cool. And these people do actually, I think, do a bit of gardening and stuff. One of them said they had broad beans in. So, yes, by this time last year, we'd had an enormous amount of heat. And fires were burning all over the east.
We already had the fires, didn't we?
Oh, yeah, they started in September last year, so it's quite different this year.
It is different. But today, we're not going to talk about fires or heat. We're going to talk about your favourite crop.
Yeah, well, the three sisters, I mean, we talked about beans until we changed into them. but corn, yeah, as a boy, someone must have given me some corn seed. I popped them in and they grew up past my head. And I know that all children that I've ever shown the corn crop to have sort of seen it as a forest, you know.
It is a bit of a forest,
so,
isn't it?
Yeah, it's much loved by children and they really don't grow out of their children's stage. I'm here as a witness to that. And I still love the fact that it grows so big and tall like a tree, you know. So the fact that it can grow above your head makes it a very desirable crop. And if it's desirable, then people everywhere have a go at it, and it's not that difficult.
Well, although, do you know what is difficult with corn, with a crop of corn? Do you know you can't tell secrets in a crop of corn, near a crop of corn? Do you know why, Trevor?
No, I don't.
Because there are so many ears. Sorry, but you could tell I was a junior primary teacher for many, many moons. Mm. But I know, I love when the corn gets, it's actually like, but you know what? For me, when you grow any vegetable, it's amazing that within such a short space of time, true, you're left with this magnificently huge crop, of, you know, or this huge plant.
Yeah, I think these are good examples of it. Both pumpkin and corn are massive. They are what's called gross feeders in that you can really heap on the manure and the water to these plants because they grow a bit crazy. Corn is like tomatoes in that as the main stem grows up, it throws out aerial roots. This, I think, is because they both came from South America where there's a lot of water, and I think they might have been planted on floodplains and the alluvial soil came down and buried them, but no problem. They sent out roots and they got a big growth spurt when they use their aerial roots. So it's worthwhile remembering that and have a stockpile of nicely aged manure and chaff to just cover those aerial roots, and you'll notice they grow very much taller when you do that.
Yeah, it's amazing what happens when you look after them.
Yeah, well, that's true.
No, that's true. And I've seen that, and I remember being really like, oh, maybe I didn't plant them deep enough, but yeah, no. That's what that's all about.
And the other thing you've got to remember, they get planted in a block. You can get a lot in. I was amazed when someone said that in a 600 millimetre by 600 millimetre, that's 2 foot by 2 foot, they had 9 corn, but it's true. You plant them a foot apart and you can get 9 of them in 2 foot squares.
Is that so they pollinate each other as well?
Yeah, well, that's the idea of it, because the male part is the tassels on the top. That's the male part. And the silks that come out the end of the cobs are the female part. And so when the wind blows, the male part falls down upon the female part. And if you've got them miles apart, that just falls on the ground. So it's no good. So you always plant them about 300 millimetres apart and in a block, which actually gives rise to many a failed attempt of doing the three sisters together. Now, there's so many people who think, well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to plant corn, and the beans are going to grow up them, and the pumpkins are going to shade in them and grow out from them, and the whole thing will be a natural mulch with beans growing up corn. And you try it, and everyone, I mean, I think 100 million people have tried it, and there's something wrong with it because there isn't room, you know.
Yeah,
there's not room
yeah.
for all that to happen. But I still think they're good companions.
Oh,
that?
Absolutely.
You know, I think you can plant them after one another, so, and you can plant them, you know, year by year after one another, but I don't worry about putting them together anymore. I've had so many failed attempts at trying to do it that it doesn't really work.
Yeah, I've done the corn, but the beans didn't work. It when they started growing, they stopped the cob. So yeah. I was thinking, well, how do you do that? Pumpkin is fantastic, but I think it needs to be just around the edge. So yeah. I've just planted that around the edge, and that's about as successful as I've been. Last year, I think I probably harvested about 8 to 10 cobs, which wasn't very many, but I think I made the mistake of not thinning them out early enough. So I had lots of lovely greenery, a bit like with my tomatoes, you know, when you've got lots of lovely greenery, but you don't have much crop.
I used to sell corn by the roadside up in the Adelaide Hills. We sold strawberries as well. And people stop, you know, when you're selling that, and they have a chat with you. And strawberries were the most popular with everybody, you know. Second was this corn, because there's this mob of nutcases called aficionados, you know. And they used to come and they would discuss when the right time to pick the cob was. Because as it grows higher and the male plants start to drop their seed upon the silks start to turn brown. And when they do, it's everyone's guess, because everyone is thinking the same as you and I, and that I'm just going to boil the water first and race out and race back with these cob. We're going to throw them in the water and eat them 5 minutes later. But you have to also get it just right. You see, you don't want them too old, you don't want them too young, and you do want them full. So the way you tell that they're about right, what I do, and I've got, like I say, 20 of them growing, I fully expect to get 30 or 60 cobs out of them. When the first one turns a sort of lightish brown, I start putting my fingernails in and prying apart the leaves around the cob and having a look inside. And when it's full, that is, it's not in any way sort of shriveled, once it's full and yellow, well, then I start picking them. The aficionados are nutcases, and they say you should pick it a day before it's properly ripe. So, because when you eat it the way we're talking about, of course, it's got no skin. It's like butter. You've got no skin to get between your teeth, and it is really sweet. So,
that's true. I have picked corn straight from the bush and just eaten it. It's delicious. But then I think you have to be really careful, because if you pick it at the wrong time, they're so starchy, and it's a devastatingly disappointing waste, because there's very little you can do with them.
Well, a lot of people only ever eat them. I mean, the ones you buy from the shops are always like that, really. They're always starchy.
They're always a bit starchy. Although I found some fabulous corn, similar, at a bit of a roadside thing, and I bought a ton of them. They were so nice. Just ate corn for a week. I'm quite happy to do it.
Well, I used to grow 300, and I used to eat 6 cobs at a sitting. And so I warn you, if you've got boys that are between the age of 12 and 20 in your household, you probably need more than 20 plants.
I think so. Or even girls, actually. My nieces, if I can find really lovely corn, they are happy if I just boil it up, and they will just sit. And there's dinner. Corn with butter and salt.
Usually they've got the sense enough to stop it too, but never know. It always used to be Io Chief, the type that you'd buy. And you can buy corn in packets. They grow it in fields in America. You've seen it in American films, these people running through the cornfields above their head.
Usually being chased by some sort of axe-wielding murderer. Right. There's always such bad press around corn, isn't there?
Well,
you never see people being chased through a field of sunflowers. Do you think that's because the sunflowers would make people happy, so the murderer would think, you know what, I'm just going to stop and enjoy the flower? It's quite hilarious, isn't it?
Sunflowers, the other one that kids love too. But apart from the films, which have not, might I say, in any way discouraged me from eating corn.
Or indicative. Although I'd probably be chased by a murderer and stop to check the corn and think to myself, what are you doing here? Yeah, that's an idea.
Just hang on.
Hang on. Have some corn. Calm down. There's no need to be so angry with the world. We're not suggesting if you're being chased by an axe-wielding murderer through the corn, you stop.
So at any rate, the super sweet varieties that they're selling are fine. I got 2 varieties, and I'm going to plant succession crops this time because I'm only capable of eating 2 now.
Oh,
and my wife's the same. And so, you know, even with 20 plants, you might get 30 or 40 cobs out of it, but that will be over a 4-week period, because even if you plant them all together, they seem to mature at different stages, and you usually get at least 2 cobs off of a well-grown corn. But I'm going to plant a second crop when I feel like it, probably mid-December.
When's too late to plant the corn?
Well, this is Gawler, you see. Yeah. I mean, Gawler's pretty good. It would really only take you 3 months, and you probably still could pick them in April, so you can still plant in January, I reckon. and yeah. possibly, well, let's just say January.
January, alright. Well, that's good to know, because I'm on holidays. Over January, I'll plant some more corn then. Yeah, my seeds aren't doing so well, but you reckon persevere.
Well, I'll show you mine. I'm going to plant another lot. So, yeah, you shouldn't have any trouble. It just depends on your ground, really.
I've dug it over, got the compost. It's where I had the broad beans beforehand, so that's what I'm... I know.
Well, I mean, they should really come up. You've got to water them a lot, and all that sort of thing can happen too. And it's best to plant them just before the rain too, but that's everything, just before the rain. So that is corn, according to me. Did you have any meals that you could think
of? Oh, where do you start? Like corn, I don't know, it sounds really boring, but it really is fabulous on the cob. But you can do tons of stuff with it. So I was saying to Trevor before, when we used to go camping, we'd get the alfoil, you'd put the corn in, you'd put in tons of butter, salt, garlic, wrap it up really tight and sort of shove it in amongst all the coals and stuff, and then it have that kind of smoky flavour.
Yeah.
I love that way more than boiling, because it almost has a chewy consistency. You can also put them on the hot plate on a barbecue. Yeah, I think they're great. But what I think is really fantastic about corn is, so I've done some stuff in the past where, you know, I'll do that, like you'll have the butter, but you'll make up almost like a chili paste, so you'll sort of really, really, really thinly slice chilies and a modicum of them with the garlic and all that sort of stuff, and you mix that all up and pack it around, and it kind of infuses in the flavour. You brush the chilies off, unless you particularly love a mouthful of chili, which I do not. And the other one I absolutely love is when you just make almost like a pesto out of whether it's rocket or basil or whatever you've got going on. Once again, put them in the oven, like almost roast them. I know it's a bit hard because usually we're making them in summer, which I think is why people boil them quickly. But I like it. You stick them in an oven tray. When they're nearly hot, then you put your pesto on it. Sprinkle some Parmesan. I know, Trevor. Sprinkle a light amount of Parmesan on it and then stick it in the oven until, you know, the Parmesan goes crispy.
Wow.
And then you're having that. Fantastic. And look, the other way too is if you're slicing them up in probably, I don't know, what, 3 or 4 centimetre rounds, just kind of boiling them, chuck them in the kids' lunch boxes actually. They're really good. But put them in little. Cats like corn. Whenever, I don't know why, but whenever I've put the corn husks into the compost, the cat will invariably try and pull it out. I'm not sure what that's all about. But I think with corn, the other thing you can do is scrape it, like kind of get your knife with a fresh one, scrape off all the kernels, soak it, boil it, blend it, beautiful base for a soup or a dal, adding some of your dal and stuff, doing some of that sort of stuff, using it as a bit of a thickener. Now, the other thing you're supposed to do, which I think I must have tried years ago when I was much more adventurous with these sorts of things, was popcorn. Home dry your corn, but you see, usually I don't ever have, you know, there's not enough, you eat corn. You know, but for those people who, such as yourself, have so many. Dry your corn, have your husk, and then I've bought those off people, and then I've made popcorn out of that. Now, it doesn't go that really commercial fluffy. That's the trick. So, you know, when you're kind of cooking them in the pan, they will heat up, they'll pop a bit, and they're a bit chewier, sort of, but they're really yummy. With salt, I actually firmly believe that you can't have corn without salt. It may be illegal, I'm not sure. But I do think, and putting a sprinkle of salt on there. So, for example, when I cook corn, I would just have, say, corn with some, you know, maybe a toss salad or some root vegetables, steamed root vegetables. Like, I sort of treat it like some people would meat or the protein, because I think it's actually really quite substantial. I've sort of found, I've been to people's houses and they kind of give you corn with piece of fish. Or, you know what I mean? But I find it a bit much.
It can be complimentary taste. You can... I've also taken the kernels off and used them in fried rice.
Oh, there's an idea. And you as exciting as mine, but still, I'm very impressed, Trevor.
You can buy baby corn, so obviously people use that in fried rice. And I have grown maize. Now, maize grows to 9 foot high. All corn is hybrid in that you can't use
imagine
the seeds.
Imagine what a serial killer could do in the crop of maize, Trevor.
A trapeze artist with a chainsaw.
there'd be no hope for anyone.
Imagine the size of the spiders in there. But no, you can grow maize. Now, maize is chewier.
Yeah.
And probably not as sweet, but it's probably better for you.
Okay.
And you can save the seed. So if you can get them, both those things, the miniature corn and the maize, are worthwhile trying.
Can I also say that with the corn, and now I do tend to buy this, I haven't made it, but polenta. Those people who are gluten intolerant, get the polenta. And like a friend of mine who's Italian, she talks about her dad making this polenta and putting on a big breadboard.
Mm.
He'd make the polenta, just pour it on this breadboard with cheese. Instead of pizza base, I make like a polenta. So you cook your polenta, fry it, just give it a little bit of a crispy edge. But you actually don't have to. Put whatever you would normally put on a pizza on top of it. It's a little bit thicker.
Mm.
But it is fantastic. So polenta is really good. When my son was younger, I used to make polenta bread and I would put rosemary through it. So I'd put like rosemary and garlic.
Wonderful.
Polenta bread, thinly sliced. Well, actually, that's a big fat lie. Thickly sliced.
Yeah.
Chuck it in the toaster if it can hold. Right. And with just a bit of butter, it's a bit more of a substantial meal and it doesn't have that white flour. And it's cheap.
Yeah, I know.
Like, Trevor, polenta is just so cheap.
Yeah. I'm sure corn is very good for us. My wife does the polenta cooking, I must admit. Haven't stolen her recipe yet.
Yeah.
But certainly, you know, Simon Bryant and that lot, they love their polenta. And it is quite versatile. And like you say, it's more of a bread. It's more of a crusty sort of loafy thing than it is a... Yeah. Grain, really, isn't it?
Yeah, and you can do lots with it. Once you get polenta, is a little bit like quinoa. You can be really nervous about cooking it at first, but once you've got the hang of it, you literally never get it wrong. You know, I'm very adept at cooking quinoa now, but I remember like probably about 4 or 5 years ago when I first started working with quinoa, I really struggled with it. The same as with polenta, like when I first started with it, but. So I think that's another fantastic way to eat corn.
Do you think we've exhausted corn yet?
Oh, we probably have.
Beans aren't being talked about because we put them with peas on another podcast, but pumpkin. Pumpkin is another kid's crop, really, isn't it? Oh, pumpkin patch and Halloween and all that sort of thing.
Although my daughter-in-law has a pumpkin phobia, and she talked about when her and her siblings were kids, they found a rotten pumpkin and they smashed it like you do when you're kids. Well, then all these pumpkins and they took over the yard and she said she's still like really freaked out by there were just pumpkins everywhere, you know.
There's a nice thing about them. I mean, they are growth feeders. You can grow them in poor soil, but they don't grow anywhere near as well. Yeah, and you more or less got to remember where you put them. So it's a good idea to make a saucer and put about 4 seeds in it and then put a stake on that saucer so because a pumpkin will grow everywhere, of course. And it grows up vines too, which a lot of people don't know. It grows up trellises, like a vine. So the only trouble with a small backyard is that pumpkin will take over the lot if you have a good year. And let's face it, a good year is only partially due to you. It's when the rain comes and when the sun comes and stuff like that.
The chalk doesn't get out.
That's right.
I used a pumpkin vine to clear an area of garden one year. Just planted pumpkins. They went berserk and they got rid of all the weeds and everything in the area. It was great. That's the area I've got the jacaranda and everything planted in now. And that was fantastic.
I think people do love pumpkins. I mean, there's a lot more than we know. I was reading, believe it or not, I was watching a YouTube about a young German couple cycling across Uzbekistan or something. And each day for lunch, they'd have another melon. So there's a lot of different melons that we don't see much of here. Our main ones are the butternut, the Queensland blue, and the Jap, which is now called Kent in the shops. We do have watermelon and rock melon as well. They're pretty much the same sort of thing. I think you treat them much the same. They love water, of course.
Yeah.
And they are the dessert ones. But there was a time when every dietitian would tell you to eat pumpkin to lose weight.
Yeah.
Because it didn't have much in the way of carbohydrate. It had taste and lots of water, but it didn't have much in the way of carbohydrates.
So. Yeah, but the way I cook pumpkin, I don't know that it's a particular diet thing. The way I love
butter on it.
Yeah, I was going to say, pumpkin soup, I make a roast pumpkin soup. I always think if you're going to make pumpkin soup, roast, caramelize the pumpkin.
Yeah,
but you know, giant wedges of just roast pumpkin.
Mm.
Like on next to a salad, I was in a cafe once and they came out with a giant, you know, roasted wedge of Kent pumpkin next to my salad, all very fancy done. And I just remember being a bit like, oh, God, you know, geez, it was yummy, you know.
It can be nice.
It can be really nice. And then pumpkin, I'm just trying to think of a herb or a spice that pumpkin doesn't go well with. I don't think I can. I mean, sage, pumpkin and sage, you can put sage in the soup. You know, parsley, that's not as exciting. Always garlic. Pumpkin and sage actually go really nicely together because sage can be quite a strong flavour and you have to be careful with it. So you boil your pumpkin up and make pumpkin gnocchi instead of potato.
Oh,
the trick with pumpkin soup, Trevor, yes. Are you ready for my secret trick? Always put a potato in there as well. Always. And pumpkin gnocchi, I love pumpkin gnocchi, whereas I don't like potato gnocchi. Look, pumpkin pasta, I just think pumpkin is so versatile. And like you're sort of saying here, it is so cheap and it's so good for you. And I think we need to remember that these meals, I mean, particularly, it seems ridiculous to waste huge amounts of money on food, stuffed pumpkin. So you get a pumpkin, a ton of rice, saute it, all your vegetables and everything, put all your herbs through there. Chuck all the leftover bits of cheese from the fridge, you know, when you get that little bit of feta. Grate it all up, put it through, pack it in, really, really pack it in, and slowly, slowly cook it. That's the trick. Really slowly cook it. Stuffed pumpkin, like unbelievable. So good. Really? And so cheap. I mean, a giant pumpkin, it wouldn't even cost $2 to feed a family of four. And everyone walks away healthy. So we talk about health.
Yeah.
We talk about health and we talk about, you know, taste. And so you've got all that.
Mm.
And then you've also got the inexpensive bits of it. And pumpkin flowers, you can cook with pumpkin flowers. A bit like you can with zucchini flowers.
Yeah, that's right.
Bit easier. Stuff them with ricotta. Zucchini could
be included in. I got a Charmaine Solomon pumpkin soup, which has just got onion, nutmeg, cardamom, one other, stock, milk, cream.
Yeah.
And then the pumpkin pieces all peeled and chopped up, but with the cream pumpkin soup, that is about a $2 meal, if that. You know?
Oh, exactly. So did coconut cream and milk. So if you've got a vegan coming for dinner, use coconut cream because, you know, the vegan will thank you and so will everybody else. They don't need to know. People think pumpkin soup is utterly boring. I think it is the quintessential comfort food. Chop it up, put it through a salad. I haven't finished yet, Trevor. Gosh, you've got me going now.
I think pumpkin is a delicious tasting thing.
Absolutely fabulous and cheap.
Picking them is sometimes a problem because they last all winter. So when you pot them in and you put four seeds in a saucer and you keep it watered in good soil and it will do the rest for you. Basically, I don't think anything can compete with it. I don't think even bugs can compete with it because it grows too fast. And when it comes time to picking it, which is about autumn, you know, it's about March, April, May sort of thing, you take a bit of the stem off, you'll see the stems die down, and when you tap them, they'll sound hollow. That's when you know it's time to pick them, or you can just wait for everything to die off in the end, but you can pick some a bit earlier, and that's the ones where the stalks have dried out and gone brown. They can be left in the sun for 3 or 4 days to harden up before you store them, but they will store all winter long if you do that. Yeah. So you harden the skin up. Like with potatoes or onions, you can't have any fault. They've got to be perfect ones. They can't have cuts in them or anything like that. I've got them stored down the cellar now from last year, and I didn't really do much. So they're a good crop from that point of view. And I do make the point here about thrifty meals, $3 meals. You hear people say you can't do it, but that's because they're not gardeners, basically.
Yeah, you can't do it. And also, when you think about it, you know, even in the shops, big blue pumpkins the other day, I think they're about like $1.50 a kilo, you know.
Not bad, is it?
And a huge one like that, usually I always get my son to chop them up. They make me a bit nervous. Get your axe out. But no, I disagree. I think you can easily do $3 food. But also, I think those people eat a lot of meat.
True.
Who say no to it.
New potatoes are the same. You just leave the skin on because it looks like part of the potato when you pick it fresh.
Yeah.
And just wash it and just boil it, probably for 10 minutes this time, and then put your butter and your salt on it.
Yeah. And your chives.
What, chives?
Your chives, chopped up chives.
You're getting very sophisticated.
I know, chopped up chives. And there's nothing like a homegrown potato.
And so I think we are all the time, we're talking about gardens that save you money, not cost you money. So these two crops are very good for that because both of them a fairly foolproof. I wouldn't say that you grow them every year the same, because certain years favour them.
Yeah.
But we just all harvested our broad beans now, so the first of the heat comes on and the peas and the beans, broad beans, die off. And so you go through, you pick them all. Some of them are crunchy and brown, but they're all right for next year's seed. You probably can dry them and then use them. You can buy dried broad beans out on the market. So you can use them in soups and stews and stuff as thickening.
Salted, they're lovely. A lady I worked with, she had a fabulous broad bean crop this year, and she was telling me she was getting all the beans out the pod, and she just thought, these pods, what a waste. She didn't want to waste them.
Yeah.
Because it was winter, they had the little outdoor fire pit sort of thing, and she had a little saucepan on it with oil.
Yeah.
And she just thought, oh, wonder what would happen if I chucked the pods in there, you know. Oh, my God, she said, you chuck them in there, and just until they just almost blacken, put through some salt, of course, and then you have them like you would chips, but so much better than chips, obviously, because they're broad beans. But how not to waste it? How good's that?
Yeah, and because the whole of the plant's great on your compost.
Yeah.
Last week or last podcast, I said that Epsom salts generate phosphate. I think I said iron and calcium or something. That was a bit wrong. If you put Epsom salts every 2 weeks, you should be putting a fertilizer on your tomatoes. And if you include a little bit of Epsom salts amongst the seaweed and the nitrogenous fertilizers and the all-round fertilizers, because it works on the soil, it generates phosphate, which tomatoes need. It's very good. But it generates nitrogen and sulfur. Now, the nitrogen isn't really a problem, even though they say don't give too much nitrogen to your tomatoes. They still like some, because they like to be a nice dark green colour, actually. So they still like some. The sulfur changes the pH in the soil, and when you change pH more towards neutral, you free up a lot of the minerals. So it could well be that it frees up the iron and the whatever else I said. That's just a point. I'd like to go back to cycling. I think cycling is important for town planning. I think, you know, it's got less pollution, less noise, it has less accidental deaths than cars, and it gives you more exercise. It gives you more person-to-person connection, because you're actually out in the air and you're facing people.
Sometimes they're yelling at you to get off the road, but that's okay. It's no, all the way to connect.
Car, I'm talking about the ones on bikes.
Yeah.
And it gives you more space, basically, more space to plant trees and so forth. So I think we should really, you know, reinforce all those who agree, and let's face it, it's practically everybody.
Yeah.
But they are putting some cycle tracks around here, like on the new bypass road across the bridge and so forth. But we're not really tackling the bike parking well enough,
no,
I don't think.
No.
Because I think one of the things that would hold me back is if I had a $2,000 bike or something, I wouldn't really just want to leave it for hours in the street. I'd like an area that was roofed and secured. And they do it in Holland.
They do, but they also have bikes stolen a lot in Holland. They do. But I agree with you, because I know if you can leave your bike by the train station, you've got a card, you can leave it in a secure spot, lock it up. Nobody who can get in there is going to bother stealing your bike unless yours is better, which in my case it is, because I've got an electric bike, which I'm extraordinarily proud of. I'm quite lucky, so I ride my bike to work. It doesn't take long. But there's a compound where the government cars are kept, so I'm actually able to lock my bike into there.
Beautiful.
Because otherwise I wouldn't ride my bike. I wouldn't lock it just in the general car park. Even if it was locked, I just wouldn't leave it there for a whole day. But I think as well, for me, what I think we have to recognise is the mental health benefits of riding the bike. So when I ride my bike to work, even if it's freezing cold, you know, I've got my beanie, I've got my hat on, I've got my big parker on sort of thing, and the wind is just biting into my face. Yeah. You know, you're certainly awake by the time you get to work. But it's really lovely. Like, it's lovely. And I've had a few people kind of going, oh, we saw you zooming down Murray Street. You were zooming up First Street. And there is that real lovely sense of zooming. And I think going for a bike ride is that fresh air stuff. Walking's lovely, but there is this lovely sense of accomplishment. I have discovered we've got some quite nice tracks. I agree with you around Gawler, but we don't have lots of places to lock the bikes up. That is a massive issue. The other thing you can do is not only just save money on petrol, but I have two saddlebags and a basket. So when I go shopping, I am really thinking about what I'm purchasing to fit on the bike.
Yep.
Whereas when I've got the car, you tend to not be as mindful, because you think, oh, well, I can fill the whole boot up. Who cares? And you also think about what you want to be purchasing. Instead of thinking, I'll be slack and go and get a bag of potting mix, I'll actually kind of go out into the chook shed and dig over bits of that and sort of spend my time making that a bit more usable. Mm-hmm. But I agree, and I think, like you were saying, in Holland, the infrastructure in so many places, and even when I lived in Adelaide, the infrastructure, there's still not enough emphasis on it when you are doing town planning.
Yeah, that's right. And I mean, it's important. I won't go on because we're running out of time, but I think you could have 100 bike parks, that is, ones with a roof and some sort of security on them, at all the schools, primary schools, high schools, all the shopping centres, all the municipal gathering spots. Now, you know, that might be, I don't know, the unemployment centre or the council chambers or something like that. But if you could just have lots of 100 bikes, they only take the space of 10 cars, actually. So cost, because they've got these tracks that you can put your bike up two stories between the other two, and that sort of locks it in any rate. So that was just my point, that I think on the part of the ongoing crusade for better cycle tracks and better encouragement of people using cycles, particularly the poor, because they definitely save money.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the thing is, see, do you remember when we were kids, you just rode your bike to school?
Yep.
And it didn't matter if it took you an hour. Your mum would have laughed in your face if you'd suggest, can you drive me to school? Yeah. What for? It's raining. Well, your point? You know, and I think that would be really good if a lot more kids rode their bikes to school and rode their bikes home again.
Yeah.
There would be so much more exercise for kids that would benefit their mental health.
And take cars off the road, too.
Take cars off the road, and also that sense of, I know this is going to sound really weird, I think it would be really nice for kids to just ride their bike to school and have that kind of a bit of alone in their head time.
Yeah, although it's also a gregarious time in that they can be, and they usually are, talking to each other three abreast on the road. That really annoys the cars, but if we had good cycle tracks, of course. So that's just my final point. So I have finished the Three Sisters.
You finished the Three Sisters, and we're going to ride our bikes down to get some more stuff for the corn. So what's next month, Trevor? Are we going to talk about water in the garden?
Yeah, it's either that or it's all the rest of them. I mean, we've done the Three Sisters and the Mediterranean, which I, in my head, see as the two main ones, but you know, there's the allium family, the onions, there's the carrots, there's the lettuce, you know, there's quite a lot. We said you plant everything now, and we're running out of time, but it's only because these podcasts could go on for years, so this information could be useful to you next year. But there is the other thing. Yes, we could talk about water because it's summer, but there is the other thing of all the other crops we haven't mentioned yet.
Cool. So that was just to wait and see. Mm-hmm. It'll be a nice surprise.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you very much, Trevor.
Thank you very much, Michelle.